Hi, and welcome to the fourth module of software engineering. In this module, we will discuss one of the hottest topics in software engineering today, and that is agile software development. This module is structured in a similar way as the previous modules. We have three readings, one book chapter, and two papers. The book chapter again serves as a backgrounder on the topic of agile software development, whereas the papers in Moodle go a bit more into depth. The first paper I asked you to read is called The Scrum Guide, and it describes Scrum, one of the most widely used software processes today. I guess many of you already might be familiar with the process, either from working in industry or from taking our software project course where the process is used. Still, the guide here is the definite description of what Scrum is and what it's not, so it should provide very useful to most of you. The second paper discusses a related topic, which is lean software development. The lean philosophy has had an enormous impact on manufacturing, and now it's also already starting to have that similar impact in software development. If anyone has talked to you about waste elimination or Kanban, that would be examples of things included in lean software development. I do hope you enjoy this paper as well. In addition to the readings this week, we also have a podcast. In the podcast, I discuss how Ericsson in Finland made a very successful large-scale agile transformation, moving from a waterfall-based process to Scrum. In the podcast, I discuss the background transformation process and results with Christian Engblom, a manager at Ericsson, who had a central role in the transformation. And of course, after the readings as usual and the podcast, I have some exercises for you to do. There is a quiz and an essay, you know the drill by now. And again, please remember that you also need to grade the essays of three other students from the essay in Module 3. And as always, the deadlines for everything is on Monday morning at 8 a.m. I do hope you have a great week and find the module stimulating and interesting. But now, let's talk about agile software development. What's the background with agile methods? Most of the ideas that we see in agile development these days go back to the 70s and 80s. So there's really nothing that new, but it's a very well done packaging and marketing job. The background was that in the 90s in particular, there was a heavy emphasis on documentation, process standardization, waterfall processes, and something called the CMM, then the CMM, now the CMMI, the so-called capability maturity model, that required extensive, not only documentation when you build software, but extensive documentation of the process you use to build software. And this led to extremely bureaucratic software development organizations in which the actual part of writing software wasn't necessarily too big. And then some people, some consultants, went to Salt Lake City, a ski resort, and had a good time and said that we will change the world. And they actually succeeded pretty well. But they said that the focus of the old methods focused on the had some problems, and the agile methods focus instead on the code. And they are very iterative, less bureaucratic, and the idea is that they deliver working software quickly. So instead of waiting a year or 9 months before you see anything, you will get software almost next week or next week. So we will stop the whole idea of having these silly documents. We will deliver software because that is what you're paying us for. That was the message these guys said. Their aim was to reduce the overhead by limiting documentation and to make processes that are able to respond quickly to change. To show you two sides of the same coin, all agile development models are time boxed. That means iterations with deadlines that don't move. Incremental and iterative models, you do several builds with very short iterations. So if in the old world of incremental and iterative development, the typical iteration length was 3 to 4 months, in the agile models, it's 1 week to 1 month. Would be a typical, or very typical in Finland would be having iterations of 2 weeks. Then of course the fact is that it's not sexy to call an iteration, so in Scrum you call it a sprint instead because it sounds more fun, but it's actually exactly the same thing. This goes of course into the marketing thing. If you want to sell an old thing
and do it well and make it sound new, it's good to take on some new terminology. So we can see this in all agile models. They talk about the same things we have been talking about in software development for ages, but they use some more sexy, funny terms. To take the aspect of marketing into account, this is what the guys came up with. So we had a bunch of consultants gathering together and saying, we will change the world. Everybody had their own model. And they did agree that we will not do one single agile development methodology, because then, of course, I can sell my thing and you can sell your thing. So we will keep selling the same things we have been doing, but we will do a joint marketing agreement and call ourselves the Agile Alliance. And this is our program declaration. This is the declaration of what agile development is all about. But this is what people will tell you, that agile development, we are uncovering better ways of developing software by doing it and helping others do it. And we have come to value individuals and interactions over processes and tools. This is very, very well written, because it's very difficult to say that they are completely wrong. So we value individuals and interactions over processes and tools. So have people talk than focus on writing documents and doing extensive process documentation. It's more important to have software that works than having a pile of documents talking about a piece of software that hasn't been written. It's more important to collaborate with the customer rather than have contract negotiations and penalty clauses and so on. So this is a statement that says we need to change things. The idea is that instead of having this you as a customer against us as a developer, we need to collaborate and we need to be able to respond to change quickly rather than following a plan that we have done in great detail that we know we can't follow.
I've actually done research related to agile development and in my bachelor's work, and I've noticed that everywhere when someone references to agile, they always show those four principles. I mean the manifesto. But there are actually those 12 principles, which, in my opinion, actually very well describe what agile methods are all about. And there are, in my opinion, no sexy words they're used. They're using completely normal words and describing the agile very well.
I don't have, for time reasons, the agile principles here right now, but there are some good principles and there are some principles that have no message really, and some that are really bad. Let's go into what agile is as defined by the agilists. It's the Agile Manifesto, and then we have the interpretation, which is the 12 principles. And this is the two levels that agile, the guys behind the agile movement said, we agree to these two levels. We agree about the manifesto, and we agree about 12 principles. Then we disagree about everything else, because then we have our own models. These 12 principles part of them have been shown wrong, and part of them have been criticized for being empty, and part of them are actually pretty good. Here we have Somerville's take. So this is not the agilist's list, but he says that the principles are customer involvement. So the idea here is that the customer works closely with the development teams. This is a big change from the waterfall model that in many cases makes sense. We do incremental development. It's about people. This has been heavily criticized. They say it's people about not process. But for example, if you look at Scrum as an agile process, there's one rule that says you cannot change Scrum. So it's agile and it's all about people as long as you do exactly as we tell you. They are actually not consistent with their own arguments. There are some issues there. However, regardless of these arguments, many of these agile processes have been shown to work extremely well in industry. They are also often liked by coders, and also large organizations increasingly adopt these. They are about embracing change. I will show some charts about that. And they say that you should maintain simplicity. We will, before analyzing them more, I will very, very briefly describe two models. The most important model is not at all, as the textbook says, extreme programming. Somerville is a requirements engineering traditional researcher, and he has clearly been asleep for a few years. Extreme programming was the one agile model that got the most attention in the beginning. Scrum is now the most widely adopted. So that's the most important one. And the book talks very little about that, so that's why I added the Scrum guide, which is a 16-page document, saying this is Scrum for you to read, because it's important. This is the model that you will run into in industry, almost anywhere you go. So what does Scrum look like? At the core of Scrum is an iteration. It's called a sprint. It's in the middle. Basic Scrum says that the best length for an iteration is 30 days, so 1 month increments. In Finland, due in particular to a few consulting houses that have a very strong market position, in Finland the most widely adopted iteration length for sprints is 2 weeks, and some companies do three. In Finland, we have a more focus on shorter iterations. So we have one iteration, and these are iterations in the traditional sense that we plan what we are going to do in the iteration, we implement and test it, and we are able to ship something at the end of the iteration. When we plan in the beginning of the sprint, it's called sprint planning. At the end, since we have working software, we do a demonstration, we show it, and then we do something called a retrospective, which means that we as a team think about how could we work better in the next iteration. So these are the things that happens around an iteration, and you will have more descriptions of these in the text. On a daily level, the basic Scrum people is a Scrum team. And a Scrum team consists typically of between 6 to 8 developers that do development and testing. Every day they gather together and answer 3 questions, typically in the morning. So very often you see these so-called daily scrums or daily stand-ups done at, let's say, 9 o'clock. And then everybody answers 3 questions. And that is, what did you do since our last meeting? What will you do until our next meeting? So what did you do yesterday? What will you do today? Do you have any problems? And the idea here is that you get immediate daily feedback on how things are going for people. And you might say this is silly if you have 6 to 8 people and now the idea is that they all sit in the same room. This is actually very important. We see organizations implementing Scrum, but they have people sitting in their own offices. That's a bad sign. It's probably not a well-working Scrum implementation. So you would have these people sit in a team room, everybody face-to-face, and they would have these daily meetings. And these have been shown that it's very, very important to actually do this communication. So this is what happens during a sprint. One thing we need to know is, well, how do you know what to build? How are the requirements and things you are supposed to build handled in Scrum? Well, we use something called a backlog. You can think of it as a prioritized list of requirements. So we have a product backlog, which are the prioritized features desired by the customer in order. We have a very, very important role responsible for this prioritized list called the product owner, the guy in Scrum, behind which all requirements management is hidden. So this is the guy who can answer the question, what does this requirement mean? How should we implement it? Is it done now? Is this good enough? For certain projects, it works well. If we go to large organizations and complex products, of course, the product owner role cannot really be one person, though that is what these models start from, this idea. But we have a product backlog, we get everything, all features we'd like to do in a product in the backlog. And then when we do our sprint planning, together with the product owner, the Scrum team, together with the product owner selects, typically from the top of the list, well, these are the features, the backlog items that we will implement in the next sprint. And then they do a breakdown into tasks, thinking about how much work is involved. And then these backlog items go into what's called the sprint backlog, or the backlog for the iteration. And then during the iterations, items come out. And here, in exactly in a similar way to the traditional incremental and iterative model, you are not supposed to do changes to those requirements during a sprint. If you have needs for changes, you will talk about, well, in the next sprint we will do this and this. A sprint is basically a time period during which the team has time to work on the agreed requirements without getting continuous changes. So it's disciplined in that sense. And as I said, then at the end of the sprint, we demonstrate and show what we've done. Fixed length sprints, we always know when a sprint starts and ends. It has nothing to do with how much we got done. We will have done what we have done so far. We can't move the sprint deadline. What we haven't done must then be moved over to the next sprint. another very important role in Scrum. It's called the Scrum Master. The Scrum Master is a facilitator who has two important roles. One is to protect the team from the rest of the organization and remove so-called organizational impediments if there are problems that makes it difficult for the team to work efficiently. And the other one is to facilitate the so-called Scrum rituals or the meetings, the plannings. There's something called backlog grooming, which means that we go through the backlog with the product owner and the team and try to understand more, and lead the meetings. So the Scrum Master is a protector, protects the team from the rest of the organization, and a facilitator of the work that the team does. Now, this is the most widely adopted agile model these days in industry. What you need to know about agile models also, they were initially developed for single team, small projects. So basic Scrum and basic extreme programming were developed for single team projects. So if you have a project that you can do with 6 to 8 persons, it's perfect. And it has some other attributes that we will look at. But what we see these days is that big organizations put together tens of Scrum teams working on a single product. And then we are in a world for which this wasn't developed in the first place. And we have lots of issues because, for example, Scrum's view to inter-team coordination, that is, if we have 30 teams all doing their thing on the same product, how should they coordinate? Scrum says, well, you do something called Scrum of Scrums. You take one guy from each team and they have a meeting. And they basically answer the same questions as the team members does in a daily sprint. So have you done something that we need to know about? What will you do? Will you do something that will disturb our work? Any impediments to other teams and so on? And these typically don't work at all. In the module in Moodle related to agile development, there's an interview with Christian Engblom, who is responsible for the agile change in Ericsson, Finland. He will talk about both issues and good experience and bad experiences with adopting agile at Ericsson. There he also talks about the fact that when you take a model like Scrum and these agile models and scale them up, you will run into lots and lots of issues that really the consultants and the really agile guys actually can't help you with because they are out of their comfort zone. They don't know. This is a very interesting case. I think you're going to enjoy that interview. So what are some benefits of Scrum? It's that we try to break down it into manageable chunks. It's the same as in incremental development. If we have unstable requirements, we basically say, okay, it's unstable, we don't know, we can defer the decision. When we know, then we will do it in a sprint. We can wait. So we do the things we are sure of, or then we do things that we know we can find out by doing. But we can wait with unstable requirements so they don't hold up progress. The whole team has a visibility of everything, so it improves team communication within the team. We see on-time delivery of increments, and customers get very quickly, they get software that we either show to them or deliver to them. So customers see a clear benefit. If it works well, we gain trust between the developers and the customers because the customer sees what we do and can give us feedback. There are lots of problems with agile methods. For example, backlog management. I did an interview with Professor Marja Kauppinen, which will be a podcast on the requirements engineering part. She says that looking at what Scrum says about product backlog management, it's like going 15, 20 years back in time from the point of view of requirements management. It's like people have forgotten everything we have learned for 20 years of trying to understand how to do requirements management. And then they thought it as something new and sexy that we should all be doing. How can this happen? You will in your book read a bit about user stories, which are often used. They are often one-liners. So a whole requirement could be one line in an Excel sheet. Excel is the most widely used backlog management tool in the world. So a requirement equals one line that some product manager wrote, and then you're supposed to figure out what that means. In the discipline of requirements engineering, there are quite advanced ways of A, figuring out requirements, and B, modeling them. And we will be talking about that later. But in basic Scrum, we don't use things like that at all. A model that is described at length in the book, read it once through, you need to know extreme programming, and you in particular should read about pair programming, but it's not the most widely used model. It was a very popular model. Many, many Scrum implementations do use practices from extreme programming. Extreme programming is another model having sharing many things with Scrum. But as you saw in Scrum, there was absolutely nothing saying how you should test, how you should code, how you should handle your backlog, and so on. Scrum is basically only a management framework, saying you have backlog with requirements, and you have these sprints and iterations, blah, blah, blah. How you actually do the real work, that's your problem. Extreme programming, on the other hand, gives you more low-level practices. So it focuses on things like automated tests and so on, and even shorter iterations, continuous integration, and other important things that we do see in Scrum implementations. So here you can see some more interesting terms. So extreme programming as a project looks like this. Let's start from the top left. We have requirements are called user stories and written as user stories. A user story is a template going something like, I, as your professor, want blah, 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 in order to. So we have a role, somebody who needs something. We have a function, what that person needs, and we have a reason, a business reason why, which the thinking is it will lead to a value. So then we can maximize and prioritize our requirements or backlog based upon perceived value by the customer. There are lots of problems with doing only this simple way of requirements management, but we will talk about that later. But we have user stories, and then we do release planning, and in the center of an extreme programming project, we have an iteration, typically 1 to 2 weeks long. Spike is a funny name for a prototype. So if there's not something we don't know how to implement, or we want to test how you can do something, then you call that a spike. It's a quick prototype to figure some technical thing out, or a requirement in order to be able to estimate better. And if you have no clue what architecture would be best, you do an architectural prototype, an architectural spike. Then you do a release plan, and you do your iteration, and the original extreme programming said that the way you work together with a customer is you have an on-site customer. So the customer sits in the same room as your single development team, and that customer writes the technical acceptance tests. And the quality of the software is good enough and it's accepted if those acceptance tests written by your on-site customer passes. So that's how you do quality assurance and testing in extreme programming. Customer writes the tests, and if they pass, the product is done. If it sounds a bit simplistic to some of you, it sounds a bit simplistic to many people, but this was the basic idea. And it makes sense in certain very specific contexts. So then you get customer approval since the tests pass and you do small releases. What were agile development models built for? They were built for being exactly smack in the middle of this chart. In the middle, we have systems that have high requirements dynamism. That is, we expect the requirements to change a lot every month. We have an organizational culture that easily can deal with changes. We are okay with not being certain. This is difficult in many organizational cultures. It's perfect for teams that are the size of 3 to 10 developers. When we go over that, agile is difficult. It is good when we have very experienced developers. If you have very experienced developers, then you need less documentation because they know so much. They have it in their head. They have done it before. So this is also one of the reasons why some of the things that might sound simplistic or not very smart actually can make sense. And then what this chart says is that the more further out you go here on these different axes, the more you should start looking into something, at least in addition to or maybe completely different from agile models. So if you have, we have also the criticality. So if it maybe it's a nuisance if the system doesn't work perfectly, then they are really good. If it will kill people if the system doesn't work, then these pure agile models might not be a good fit. However, saying all of this, looking what happens today in today's world, we have working examples of organizations breaking all of these rules. this is the so-called home ground is there in the middle. But we see projects with several hundred people doing critical systems with a wide variety of skills and different dynamisms doing agile development. But it's not pure agile development. They will have added things to that. So let's mention some problems with agile methods. It can be difficult, the communication required with the customer can be very difficult to actually achieve. It can be difficult to prioritize changes if we have multiple stakeholders. These models often have an over-reliance on automatic testing, that in many cases it's not feasible to build automated testing to the level that these models would require, or build a continuous integration machine that is needed. For big problems, complex systems, we always need some level of upfront planning and architectural design. Agile models have nothing of any of that, so we would need to add that. Some team members don't like agile models because they require heavy communication, and contractual issues can also be a big factor. If we have a large system, meaning we need many teams, what we need is to do some upfront design and planning. So we can even start to divide the work to these agile teams. We need to work hard on cross-team communication, and this is Somerville's slide. So yes, we should have regular meetings, but the problem is not arranging these regular meetings. The problem is getting the right people to talk to each other at the right time and even knowing when that is. So inter-team coordination is extremely difficult in large-scale agile development. And finally, building continuous integration for large systems can be very difficult. The idea that when we commit a piece of code, check in a piece of code that we have changed, the system is immediately built and smoke tested, can be very difficult to do in practice. I think actually Somerville's writes more traditionally, that's why I bolded difficult. Somerville says it's impossible. Well, real life shows us it's not impossible, but it's difficult and expensive, but not impossible to do a good continuous integration. To large companies, we have organizational factors. So if we can have one development team or a heap of development team being very agile, but if the rest of the organization is not, it will be humongously difficult to succeed. When we move a big organization to agile, we need to do a large-scale organizational change.
Okay, and that's all I have for you this week. I do hope you find the module interesting and stimulating. Thanks for watching. Have a great week. Bye for now.